most alternative medicine clinics, pipe shops, and medical cannabis organizations. Visit online at OregonCannabisConnection.com to learn more about how the OCC connects the medicinal cannabis community across Oregon. KSKQ thanks Oregon Cannabis Connection and listeners like you for supporting community radio. And the Talent Evening Market is Talent Oregon's best evening market. It's a place to meet friends, take home fresh produce and local crafts, listen to live music, and have a bite to eat. We meet Fridays at City Hall, 110 East Main Street in Talent. To register as a vendor, please contact Sharon at 541-535-9055 from 5:30 to dusk every Friday. And now, it is time for Beer Radio.
In him a gift I fear, long think a beer as here. And since we're nicht mehr hier, dann trinken die anderen unser Bier. Sicher muss der Wein vom Rhein etwas Wunderbares sein.
Sicher ist am feinen Sekt etwas, was besonders schmeckt.
Sicher ist der Schnaps so scharf, dass man einen heben darf.
Aber heute seid gescheit, liebe Leute.
Im Himmel gibt's kein Bier. Drum trinken wir es hier. Denn sind wir nicht mehr hier, dann trinken wir alle unser Bier.
Jeder Mensch hat seinen Tick und seine Eigenart.
Eine fliegt auf glatt rasiert, die andere auf den Bart.
Einer möchte nur Fußball spielen, dem anderen ist das Durst.
Wir allein gestehen es ein, wir haben immer Durst.
Sicher muss der Wein vom Rhein etwas Wunderbares sein.
Sicher ist am feinen Sekt etwas, was besonders schmeckt.
Sicher ist der Schnaps so scharf, dass man einen heben darf.
Aber heute seid gescheit, liebe Leute.
Im Himmel gibt's kein Bier, drum trinken wir es hier. Denn sind wir nicht mehr hier,
die anderen unser Bier. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Beer Radio. I am Ginger Johnson, your host here in Ashland, Oregon. Very happy to be with you again. Thanks for listening and streaming. You are listening to Beer Radio exclusively on KSKQ 89.5 FM. Stream it wherever you might be. And I want to send a shout out to the listener in Georgia last week with our fabulous guest in studio for a change, Allison Grayson, the filmmaker whose documentary For the Love of Beer came out last Saturday, world premiere, and yours truly was in it. And it was a thrill, I won't lie to you. It was pretty cool to see myself on the big screen. More importantly, it was a really well-done movie. Allison's a very talented filmmaker. So thanks for listening in Georgia. I know there's some people in North Carolina that occasionally listen, and you know who you are, and thanks a ton for that. And so we launch into another episode of Beer Radio. Our special guest tonight is going to call in here shortly, and until then, I'm just going to do a little... a little fundraising. We don't talk about it very often, but you may or may not know that we used to be a low power station, which means that the signal is very limited in its reach. And we have so many incredible programs. The diversity, quite frankly, blows my mind. And we've just gone to a high power tower, and we are working on raising money to keep that tower in our power, so to speak. So any donation of any size, whether it's change rattling around in the couch cushions or underneath the car seat, or it's something more significant, we are grateful for all donations, and you can help us get power to the tower. We have until September 1st to raise $5,000, and if we make that, we will also get a matching $5,000 gift from somebody else, and so anything is a help. We are on our way, and we need a little bit more help. So if you appreciate community-supported radio, please tune in and help donate. And you can do that simply and easily. You can drop it off here at the office or send it in at KSKQ, 330 East Hersey Street, Suite 2, Ashland, Oregon, 97520. Or you can, with the touch of your fingertips, use PayPal online at kskq.org. So I thank you in advance, and all of us here at KSKQ and all the other supporters of the station, thank you very much for the consideration and your gifts. They go to good use. Community-supported radio brings you things like Swallow Your Soul with Wolf, which was right before me, Lenny Tone coming at you afterwards with great music. So keep it up, and thank you very much. So moving on, we are Beer Radio here. I'm Ginger Johnson, your host. You can reach me anytime with requests, suggestions, thoughts, ideas, and great beers. And you can reach me at 515-450-7757. You can also email me anytime, ginger@womenenjoyingbeer.com. And we're also on Twitter. Tweet along with us at Women Enjoy Beer, as well as on Facebook, Women Enjoying Beer. So you can reach out whatever way works best for you. We always have our opening song, of course, In Heaven There Is No Beer. And we usually are lucky enough to have a fabulous guest coming to us live from wherever they might be calling in from. So tonight we will have our fantastic guest, one of my personally favorite humans on the planet, Julia Herz with the Brewers Association, and she is going to be tapped through here shortly. Bear with us. And in the meantime, you might want to check out the archives on KSKQ. Archived shows are always available 24 hours a day at your fingertips on kskq.org. You can just go up and click until the program archives button, and you can access whatever you like. We've had lots of incredible guests on, and everybody relates to the beer community somehow. That's what we're here to do, talk about beer and the beer community. We've had home brewers, we've had professional brewers, we've had filmmakers, we've had we've had brewers, we've had, I said that, didn't I? That's the beauty of live radio. We've had all kinds of different people, and we've had writers, we've had bloggers, we've had just all kinds of great people on with us. So keep listening, keep spreading the word, let us know what you want to hear about, and we'll just keep at it. So once again, welcome to Beer Radio. I think that our fabulous guest is live on the air. Julia, you're there?
Hi, Ginger, how are you?
Hey, Julia, I am fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing good in Boulder, Colorado here.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Is it nice and hot there today?
Since I came back from Portland, it's been a heat wave. I don't know why, but it has been.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little warm here today, but I wouldn't say it's a wave. We're kind of just in the surf. So it was good to see you last week in Portland for lots of different things. Before we go into some of those things, Julia, tell us where everybody can find out about what you're doing and the sites and the online accessibility of Julia Herz and the Brewers Association.
Sure. I'm very excited and honored to be on the show today. And the Brewers Association is a nonprofit trade group on behalf of the majority of breweries in the United States, and our beer-loving facing website is craftbeer.com.
Okay. Where else?
Brewersassociation.org is kind of more stats and statistics and what's going on the association front, on the work we do on behalf of the breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And my specific role at the association is craft beer program director, so I am a ever in-house and out-of-house cheerleader for what's going on with today's U.S. breweries, and it's a great role and position to be in, because it's just, I keep saying in many areas of the country that I've gotten to travel to in the last few years, that these are historic beer times, for sure.
And tell us why you say they are historic beer times, Julia. I've heard you say that many times, too.
Yeah, I think they are, because what you had pre-1980, pre-1970, And even if you go further back from that, take a look at what happened after Prohibition to about 1970, and you had some of the more dismal days in the United States for beer. Mm-hmm. And now today we are known as the most diverse beer culture in the United in the global community of beer lovers. We have more than 13,000 beer brands out there, and 1,700 plus breweries. So these are very exciting and historic times.
Excellent. And I'm guessing that, you know, you usually have a smile on your face, even though I know that sometimes you're always on. I am amazed constantly, Julia. You are one powerhouse of a person, and I'm not amazed in that I don't think you can do it. I'm amazed in that your stamina and your incredible passion is always coming out your pores. So how does that particular bit of information, that, you know, more than 13,000 beer brands, 1,700 breweries, you know, things are like they've never been before, even pre-prohibition, simply with the variety and the diversity and so forth, how is that usually, what kind of reactions do you usually get from those, that bit of information?
Well, believe it or not, I tend to travel in very well-established beer circles. I'm fortunate for that. So even with that, though, there's often surprise. I mean, 13,000 beer brands stop people in their tracks, for sure.
Yeah.
But if you take 1,700-plus breweries and you multiply that times whatever amount of beers that they might be making, and also account for the fact that 1,000 of the 1,700-plus breweries in the United States today are brew pubs, you've got a lot of experimentation going on. You've got a lot of ability on a smaller level to, you know, shift and roll with the punches instead of take years to roll out one specific product. And that's why it's so exciting, just because on, you know, the brewery level, we're not so corporate. We definitely have large corporate global brewing companies out there who, you know, last year, overall beer category was down 0.9%, and that's a concern and definitely something to watch. Whereas we just, that was not in 2010, that was the first half of this year, down 0.9%, but the craft brewers were up 14% by volume or 15% by dollars. And so I think the experimentation takes them many places and takes us as beer lovers many places and incites a lot of excitement, but yet still when you reveal some of the news and information and stats, It stops people, it makes them think, and it makes them realize how prolific craft beer has really become.
Sure, right. And I know that you are extremely knowledgeable in a lot of things. So give us just the really quick numbers. Pre-prohibition, how many did we have in the United States? How many breweries did we have?
Well, I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but, you know, before... kind of, so to speak, the turn of the last century, you know, we had 3,000 plus breweries out there, and then in 1922 through 1933, you basically had Prohibition, and that was a very abysmal time. I mean, fermented beverages in our country are certainly a right and not a privilege, and that's important to be remembering.
Yes.
But it really affected the business of beer, and coming out of it in 1933, beer was the first back. That's a great statement to share. In April 7th, 1933, alcohol of a certain level was allowed to be enjoyed way before the December 5th, 1933, when Prohibition was fully instituted. So basically, beer was first, and there's no stopping now. It's been very interesting to see the times. And I also, where does it all go from here? I mean, that's an interesting conversation to get into.
Yeah, we'll save that for a little bit later, but that's a good question. First of all, it's impossible to predict. At the same time, the trends and the habits and the patterns and historical reference and so forth, that probably creates an interesting crystal ball to look into.
Yep, and the prediction game is not a good one to get into, but
no.
I think the future looks very bright. I mean, it's certainly like... With 700 plus, by the way, breweries and planning on top of the 1,700 breweries in the United States that we've documented, that's the most breweries and planning that we could say we've ever seen, at least on the books. And that's going to show us that on all levels and all little nooks and crannies of the U.S., we've got a lot of innovation and a lot of small brewing minds trying to make it big, and that's what's going to keep it exciting.
Right. Of course, they're not small-minded people. They just have lots of small pockets of incredible creativity, innovation, and passion. Yeah.
Right.
That's really cool. You are listening to Beer Radio. I am Ginger Johnson, your host, coming to you live from Ashland, Oregon. You can always stream us. Thanks last week for the Georgia listener. I know we have some fans in different areas of the country, and we really appreciate it. And I think they tune in because we have great guests like we do tonight. Julia Herz, Program Director of the Brewers Association, the organization that supports and works for the small brewers of America. Julia, will you tell us the definition of a small brewer? Because, and actually there's a couple terms I want you to share and enlighten a little bit more. That both the definition of a small brewer, or maybe the better definition is really the craft brewer. And if it's not craft, how do you categorize that?
Sure. Well, I mean, at least to put statistics together, as I mentioned, there's 1,700 plus breweries in the United States, and there are many sectors, I guess you would say, within the segment of craft brewers, and then you have the overall beer category, and those sectors are brew pubs, which make less than 15,000 barrels of beer a year, and the majority of what they sell is on-premise. That's a brew pub. There's microbreweries, which they also make less than 15,000 barrels of beer a year, but the majority of what a microbrewery would sell is off-premise. And then the next tier is regional craft brewer. They're more often than not just distributing in their own state. They're regionally distributed. A few regional craft brewers are nationally distributed. And they're 15,000 barrels of beer, up to 6 million barrels of beer. And then you have regional brewers who are not considered craft, and then you have large brewing companies. And so to answer the original question, and we get asked it a lot, is what is a craft brewer or what is craft beer?
Mm-hmm.
We do not define what craft beer is. I mean, that's basically up for the beer lover to decide.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a term anyway, and I mean, microbrewing grew into craft brewing.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed something as the national association that represents the majority of those brewing companies, and frankly, 99% of the beer brewed is under our membership.
Mm-hmm.
We needed something on the books to be able to say what was out there on the smaller level. And so craft brewer definition is small, less than 6 million barrels of beer a year, independently owned, meaning no more than 50% of their ownership is, no more than 25% of their ownership is by a non-craft brewing company. And then the traditional part of small, independent, or traditional is the majority of what they make is an all-malt product, or their flagship is responsible for most of their sales, and they're not using adjuncts to lighten the flavor. If they do happen to use adjuncts, they're actually added to enhance the flavor of the beer.
Okay, and can you define adjuncts, another great beer term. Can you define that for our listeners, Julia?
Sure. Adjuncts would be corn or rice used to give a beer maybe alcohol, but not body and not flavor. It's certainly a common practice. Pre-prohibition lagers, which is a great style out there, and made pre-prohibition era, is Pilsner style of beer, and corn was commonly used to as an available ingredient. But nowadays, on the larger scale, that adjunct is possibly used to supplement as opposed to use all malt.
Sure. Okay, great. It's kind of a fun word to say in a silly little way, but it seems like a lot of people still could use a little either reminder or just don't know what it means. So, and it's not necessarily the devil. It's just another way of contributing to the beer. At the same time, you look at how it contributes from what you're saying, it sounds like, as far as what it does for the beer.
Right, in terms of adjuncts, for sure. And, I mean, you asked back to the original, what is a craft brewer? The majority of brewing companies in the United States classify with what I just explained, small, independent, and traditional.
Mm-hmm.
97% on average of the 1,700-plus breweries qualify. And it's just a set of terms, or it is a term with a set of criteria that helps us kind of encapsulate what's going on with today's small and independent breweries.
Sure. Cool. Excellent. Thank you. How did you get into beer, Julia?
Well, I could throw that one right back at you.
But you're my guest today. You let me know.
Okay, but I'm sure your listeners hopefully have heard the story. I don't feel like I have, because you're such a good interviewer. Even when I'm offline with you, you and Larry get me talking. But my journey is... everybody has their story.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does, about anything in their life. And my career in beer and my love of craft beer and breweries is a result of, I think, just kind of a culmination of things as I came of age. But when I hadn't come of age yet, when I was little, before double digits even, my parents would take my brother and me to a place in Washington, D.C., if any of your listeners have been to Brickskeller, which is no longer, and has been purchased and now is operating under different ownership. But it was an institution in Washington, D.C., and the Brick was where we would go. And so before I was 10, I was watching my parents buy different kinds of beers and different packages, talking different styles while they ate it with food. And they would give my brother the beer cans after those, you know, every couple of month journeys down into the city of D.C. from the Maryland burbs. And so I think that stuck. I mean, it was a fun family outing. It was positive. And it got me thinking of different levels of beer, the packaging, the food, the communal aspect of it, because my parents would end up giving away a lot of the beer in the cans just so they could get the can and they'd talk to the tables next to us. And it was a very fun, happy memory. So that led to probably my interest in it. And then, I mean, long sort of story, but I certainly started homebrewing as soon as I could get my hands on a kit and when I was legal. And that was a great journey with a good friend. And then my friend no longer wanted homebrew, so I got the equipment. And
nice.
Then I just started to talk to people and learn and want to explore. And I was fortunate enough to move out to Colorado after a big cross-country trip when I quit my job back east. And that cross-country trip took me backcountry for several nights in National Forest or National Park. And then when we wanted to go find like-minded people, we would go to the brew pubs. And that was in the early 90s. And even then, we found just like the best group of people to connect with, where we were safe and embraced. And it was just so great. And so after that, I really wanted to learn more, and I landed in Boulder. And by hook or crook, I ended up getting hooked up with the local homebrew club, and then found out about the association. And it's a long story. And I won a membership to the American Homebrewers Association, which was total fate.
Cool.
Like, I literally saw Charlie Papazian, who wrote the book on homebrewing, and Charlie is our president. He works, you know, when he's not traveling, he's daily in the office. He is our visionary and our leader. And I was at a beer festival in the mid-90s, and somehow my name got picked. And it was literally minutes prior to that, I'm like stalking Charlie Papazian, following, because I could recognize him visually, following where he's walking into the building where I heard all the judges were judging, and I wanted to go see what it was like to judge beer. And I knew I wasn't allowed in that room, that wouldn't be appropriate, but I was visually trying to get a sense of like, a glimpse of what it was like to judge beer. And Charlie walked in the building, and then he walked out, and he was the one that gave away the membership, and he picked my name. And after that, I started volunteering at GABF, and then I eventually got a job here. So
excellent. And they are, you speak very highly of your colleagues. I know a lot of the wonderful people you get to work with as well, and I am quite certain that they feel the same about you. You, all of you, without exception, at the Brewers Association are remarkable, passionate, plugged in, fun people. So that's a fun story to hear. Thanks for sharing that. Have you been to the Brickskiller since it's changed?
Oh, big time. Anytime I would go back to D.C. And they just sold over, I think it was a year
right.
and a half ago.
Right.
So I cannot say I've been back since it changed ownership.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was curious about, because I know we went when we were doing our cross-country trip a couple years ago. And And it was, wow, it was one of those things it's almost like hallowed. You walk in and you've just heard so much about it. You're not quite sure what to expect, although there's certainly a lot of mystery and enticement about it. So I would be interested
to get
back.
It's like walking down into the catacombs of somebody's cellar. And
it's
like
a beer grotto.
Yeah, like you walk downstairs and it's red brick and you see all these coolers with just bottle after bottle. It was over 500 beers on the menu when it was the Brick.
Yeah.
I mean, the place was an institution and it had a great feel.
Mm-hmm.
The only complaint that it definitely continued to have, and the new owners have vowed to try and change it, is that they were constantly out of a lot of beers on their menu. And that's a common problem, frankly, with craft beer coming of age. You know, gosh bless the retailer that wants to add a lot of beers to their draft and bottle list, but, you know, gosh curse the retailers that can't keep that list updated, because it's like walking into a menu, a restaurant, and
right.
don't tell me that entree is not available. That's like ludicrous. You don't
right.
do that. So
right.
update your beer menu, retailers. That's the moral of the story there.
Right. Yeah, wouldn't it be great if you could walk in and there was some sort of virtual tool? I'm waiting for that to happen. I've got to believe someone's got it on their brain. You walk in and
right.
you have this immediately, like, minute-by-minute, up-to-date menu of what's available mm-hmm. for beer and for food and for anything else you want to partake of, because there's nothing more disappointing. And I know servers hate it when they have to say, oh, we're out of that. It's not a good thing to be out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's headed our way. It's the only obvious step.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be good. And maybe they could be solar-powered something or others. But technology isn't my world. Women enjoying beer is. So I'll leave that to somebody else. Got a lot of great technology people in the beer swirl as well. You are listening to Beer Radio. This is Ginger Johnson, your host, coming to you live from Ashland, Oregon. We have extra special guest and good friend Julia Hers from the Brewers Association coming to us live. Are you still in Boulder right now, Julia?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm back from 2 weeks on the road.
Right.
There's a lot going on for education, business, and advancing culture and beer. In the last 2 weeks, I first got to go to Bree Small School in Tilton, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Several areas of the country have maltsters. There's not even double-digit amounts. There's, I think, 5 to 7 maltsters
that's
on the map. Yeah,
wow.
In the U.S. And
okay.
Bree is one of the only family maltsters still left, and
mm-hmm.
they operate out of Wisconsin, and it was a two-day awesome malt school. And Ginger, you've been to it.
Oh, they are phenomenal people. Yeah, eat off the floor, clean standard too. Incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, excellent. So in your gadding about, you've been to hundreds of places. I'm just going to assume that. Do you have, amongst all those in your own memory catacombs, as it were, do you have a couple of places that really stand out for some reason? Not that the beer was the best you'd ever had in recent memory, or the place was beautiful, or what are a couple of really strong professional beer memories that you can share with us?
Strong professional beer memories. Well, I mean, wherever I am, if possible, I try and tour the local brewery. And it's a great way to get to know the country and the pulse of who is, you know, fun to talk to and interact with. So the stories could go back so, you know, broad, because I've been doing it for years, and
mm-hmm.
it's frankly almost a hobby. But then, you know, but then you need to make sure that you try to get a tour, too. You don't just pop in and visit. You try
mm-hmm.
to tour and see the equipment.
Right.
And if you can really do that, then you get the full experience. And, I mean, I'll just pick just to share some local flavor with your listeners, at least giving Colorado local flavor. Like on Friday, I'm looking forward, we're going to Fort Collins. And Colorado, just like San Diego and just like Northern California, and I mean just like so many pockets in Oregon and Michigan and you know, Chicago and New York, and all these places have like up and coming craft beer scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Colorado is certainly on the map, and Fort Collins comes up again and again, and I'm looking forward to going to New Belgium Brewing Company on Friday that I've been to several times.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I hold New Belgium in such high regard is because they're not only a model for breweries, they're very green minded,
yes,
forward thinking. They capture all their methane gas, and they have, so, you know, their energy comes from alternative sources, and the facility is gorgeous, and their pouring experience is amazing. You're absolutely getting the freshest beer the way they intend you to taste it, and all that. But they're beyond just a model for, I think, breweries. They're a model for other businesses,
right?
And that's where I think craft brewers are breaking the mold out of the old stereotype about, you know, light American lager and beer, and how the U.S. was known for fizzy yellow stuff that you would just swill and chug. Now we are models for other businesses. How huge is that for advancement in what's gone on? So anytime I get the chance to go to a forward-thinking brewery that's green-minded, and there's so many to list. I mean, New Belgium's just one. They get a lot of credit, and other ones don't get as recognized as much, but it's a great chance, so I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. Very good. And, of course, Kim Jordan, as we both know, is an incredible woman, one of the founders of New Belgium, and their culture and the whole thing, and their marketing, quite frankly, is really well done. I'll just put that in there.
follow your folly, Ginger.
Hang on. That sounds familiar, Julia. I think everybody in the business does that, right?
Yeah, craft brewers have such catchy labels, campaigns. It's awesome. It's very creative. They're artists, you know?
Mm-hmm. They are. They are very artistic. And, you know, we're having so much fun. We're not going to break for a song, but we are going to break for a sponsor announcement. So you'll be right back with more Beer Radio in just a moment.
A community service announcement. The Upper Rogue Community Center Duck Race will be held on Sunday, August 28, from noon to 4 p.m. at Regional Park in Shady Cove. There will be about 9 races, lots of prizes, food, and fun for the whole family. For more info, call URCC at 541-878-2702. And Just Imagine It, Inc. proudly supports KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Just Imagine It, Inc. is a resource for ebook publishing, audiobook sales, and more. They are now presenting a new podcast, Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. It offers art and entertainment news, as well as interviews with authors, poets, and even just the guy down the street. Visit justimagineitinc.com for more information. KSKQ thanks Just Imagine It, Inc., and listeners like you for supporting community radio.
Thank you to our fine sponsors. Remember, you can donate to help us get power to the tower. We've gone from low power, we've graduated up to high power, and we are community-supported radio, so anything you are willing to help us out with donation-wise is appreciated, from the smallest amount of change to the largest check you care to write. You can get in touch with us, kskq.org, and easily do it online or send a check in the mail. Thanks for your consideration. Thanks for listening to Community Supported Radio. I am Ginger Johnson, your host, happily so, at Beer Radio, exclusively on KSKQ.org, where we bring some of the beer community to life and love to share their stories and have them chime in. And we're grateful. We've had some incredible guests, and it just keeps on rolling in. And with the fact that there's well over 1,700 breweries alone, you know, we're going to be busy for a long time. So our extra special guest today, you know, they are all truly special. They're all incredible people. This one is also a good friend who I highly value and look to. And Julia Hertz is on the line with us from Boulder, Colorado. Welcome back, Julia.
Thanks for having me, Ginger. Your introductions leave me just speechless. I don't know how to respond.
Well, you don't have to. You just say thank you.
Thank you, Ginger. Thank you for that introduction.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, I know you're a busy woman too, not only just with the BA, but you've got your own life and, you know, live out there in beautiful Colorado. So, which of course we will be getting out there shortly. Before we dig into that, tell us again where people can learn more about what you do and the Brewers Association, please.
Sure. The Brewers Association website is brewersassociation.org, and our beer lover facing website is craftbeer.com. And we're the National Nonprofit Trade Association on behalf of the majority of brewing companies in the United States.
Excellent. And you are with the times, and so people can find you on Twitter where?
At symbol HERZ, H-E-R-Z, Muses.
Excellent. And
you know who just tweeted that we're doing this?
Who?
That's listening? Maureen Ogle.
Yay!
Listening.
Another friend of ours.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Maureen is awesome. I was going to bring her up a little later, but what the heck? Let's jump into that now, because you referenced Prohibition a couple times, Julia, and as I think you know, we're Women Enjoying Beer, my company, the Beer Education Group. We are doing a series of events with the local public television station here in Southern Oregon, SOPTV, for Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's next film, which is Celebrate Prohibition. And I'm rereading Maureen's book, Ambitious Brew, The Story of American Beer. Maureen Ogle, she's also on Twitter at Maureen Ogle, O-G-L-E. And she wrote that book, and I'm using that as a nice resource because she starts in the 1880s and goes through the whole shebang. And Prohibition, of course, as you and I know, is about probably not what most people think it's about, and it's about way more than we think that we think it's about. How's that for cognizant?
It gets more. I mean, you need a legal expert to explain the laws in this country. But I mean, you know, alcohol is the most highly regulated, highly taxed business out there. So it certainly paid attention to by our U.S. government.
Yes, thanks for listening, Maureen. Why do you suppose that is, Julia?
I mean, I think it's something definitely to keep in check, which is a good thing. It's to be appreciated, not abused. That's important. And I mean, being in the alcohol beverage business, I certainly am a certified tip server, and you know, everybody needs to learn how to intake one of the most fantastic parts of the food arts world. And some people do abuse it, so it's important to keep it in check.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, I would agree. And I really liked your previous statement of it's not a right, it's a privilege, and I think there's a lot of things that fall in that category. But we'll stay with beer today because it's not an assumption. It's something that we need to learn responsibly. Do you see much alcohol education, meaning specific alcohol education programs when you're out and about, Julia?
Yeah, I do. I mean, National Restaurants Association has their own version, and then there's tips. There's several professional companies. There's also training for bouncers. I mean, it definitely goes far and wide on the industry side. You just pretty much got to seek it out, and you'll find it. So I do think that on behalf of the industries that serve or either make or serve alcohol, they've got great training programs in place to teach you to be responsible servers and stewards of the beverage, and that's what's key.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. I know when I moved out here to Oregon, I have a ServSafe, which is, of course, in the food arena, a federal food education course, which I found really interesting, even though I've been cooking pretty much as soon as I could stand at the stove. And then we, in order to serve alcohol in Oregon, we have to have a server's permit by the OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And I like how they put a lot of the onus back on the server. And I think that it's the first state I've lived in of all the states I've lived in where I've seen that really up front, well done, everything. So I agree that education component is huge. And I wonder how many people that aren't in the service arena, Julia, or the manufacturer of beer would or do partake in any kind of alcohol education. That's very just like out there. I don't expect you to answer that. I'm just throwing it. But it would be good for a lot of people to take, kind of like driver's education. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had to have some sort of alcohol education?
Well, I think at minimum, even more core to that, I think it'd be great if everybody was required to wait tables in high school.
Yes.
So you had consideration towards the service. I mean, we live in a country that's rich, and we do have people that are still going hungry, which is a crime, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, you know, human communal appreciation and empathy, I think everybody ends up going out to a restaurant, and with that, we need to have everybody, I think, be in the position of not just serving beverages at a bar, but serving food and beverages at a restaurant type, so you can understand from the customer side what it's really like on the server side, and I think that would take us a long way.
Yeah, I agree. I've certainly worked retail, and I've said that before, too. If everybody just had to do country service instead of military, not necessarily, but some public retail of some sort, that would be wonderful. A lot more compassion. So you are listening to Beer Radio. I am Ginger Johnson, your host. We have our powerful guest, Julia Herz, coming to us live from Colorado today. She is the program director for the Brewers Association. Give us another description of what that specifically means, Julia. What does a program director do?
Sure. Well, I talked about the Brewers Association and what we do overall. I mean, we promote and protect today's small breweries, but the specific role that I get to serve as craft beer program director is kind of advocate and educate about what's going on with craft brewers and the tactics that we choose, and I mean there might be other better tactics, I'm ever searching those out,
mm-hmm.
are specific avenues like craftbeer.com, our website, really to share the story about what's going on with breweries and get the information out there in a fun and exciting way. It's not just centric on breweries. It expands out into your own home and how you would enjoy it. We have free tasting mat you could download. There's a beer 101 course you can take.
Yes.
Beer and food pairings. We have one of the most robust recipes sections on what incorporates beer into recipes on the internet. So it's a really, I think, feather in the cap of the Brewers Association. And it's only a little over a year and a half old, which is kind of exciting. So that site's finally getting traction. And then I'm also in charge of the annual American Craft Beer Week, which happens each May,
mm-hmm.
and there's over 40 beer weeks on the books, which has become a major priority to track.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous amount of you got beer geeks, you got beer dinners, you got beer weeks, you got beer festivals. I mean, there's so many different ways to enjoy beer today, and beer weeks have become kind of a umbrella of a period of time encapsulating different things like festivals and beer dinners and the like, because it's become so popular and there's such strong interest. So American Craft Beer Week has been a very solid thing for us, and last year in 2011, closing it out, or this year, we got all 50 states with
yes.
breweries on the books that registered to celebrate. So real exciting stuff.
That was awesome. ACBW, we did a show on American Craft Beer Week this year for Beer Radio, and of course I participated with different breweries with that, and I would agree that's a remarkable thing. And then the beer weeks, I'm thinking we should just verb the word beer, because you can put it in front of so many things, and there you go.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. I like that concept. I was just going to interject that you could even see on video Ginger Johnson, your hostess, having fun to promote American Craft Beer Week. You were definitely one of our favorite advocates, and it was so exciting to see your excitement behind it.
Yeah, that was fun. My gal Kate takes some great video. Thanks for saying that. That's nice. So you also mentioned the Beer 101 course, which is on the craftbeer.com site, right?
Yep, and beer education's got a lot going on. Have you seen it, or do you want me to explain what it is?
No. I've taken it. I've taken the Beer 101. I couldn't look you in the eye if I hadn't taken it.
You sent me tangible feedback. I correct myself. Write that from the live
tangible
record, please.
Feedback. That's
that out.
That's very diplomatically said, Julia. Thank you. Tangible feedback. Well, I'll remember that. Yeah, it's a great course. It was really straightforward. It was really elemental. I liked it. You know, I've been around beer for a long time, as you know. And our listeners know I've been in it for a few years professionally. But there's always more to learn. It's such a dynamic thing. It's always changing,
right.
You know, perceptions, definitions, developments, all those kinds of things. So I would encourage everybody to check that out. Go to craftbeer.com and check out Beer 101. It's a low investment for something that's a really cool thing. If I had some nice, really schwanky paper, I did print it out because, you know, I looked at it and smiled at myself in the mirror.
Oh, yeah, print it on good paper. That's a great idea because so it's a course on the internet.
Yep.
And craftbeer.com is kind of the launching pad to it. And what you get if you pass the assessment exam is a certificate from the Brewers Association. And we should preface that it's very beginner. Like, I really, the whole craftbeer.com website, we try to make sure that beer enthusiasts and beer geeks will be proud of what we do. But our content certainly geared towards beer beginners and just helping them distill down for them all the excitement and passion behind craft beer. And I mean, Beer 101 is a precursor to BJCP or Beer Judge Certification Program or the Cicerone Program, or now MBAA has a Beer Steward Program.
Right.
There's so many more advanced studies that you can take it to, but Beer 101 at least is a tip of the iceberg that helped get your feet wet.
Yeah, it was a fun thing to take. I sat there and I thought, oh, I should be able to get 100%, and I almost did, but, you know, my own definition was slightly different than one on the site, and that's good because that makes me keep thinking and keep striving to keep learning more. So, yeah, I love craftbeer.com site. I know I've told you before, but I'm just going to share that with the audience. It's one of, I think, the most comprehensive, user-friendly, consumer-oriented, and still extraordinarily usable by the professional and anybody else in the beer community. I love the beer and food button and page, to be specific. I point people there all the time. In fact, I understand that you know, you have those beautiful, anybody can get these, or not anybody, your members can get the craftbeer.com third page beautiful full color flyers, and I'm out, and I am going to pick up some more during the GABF, the Great American Beer Festival. But I put those at all our festivals, and quite frankly, it's the only other non-branded item that I offer people, because I know it's such a great resource. I love all the articles on there. I learned something. It's fun to see the community. The toast, too, that Jill puts together for the Brewers Association is also similar in that it's really just chock full of, you know, they're sitting down next to you and you're learning about people and beer, and I just love it. So I'm so glad that the little baby launch of craftbeer.com has gone successfully, and I would encourage all our listeners to check that out, including you, Maureen. I know you're listening.
She is. She just tweeted again.
I know. I see that. But yes, indeed. So let's talk next, Julia, about the GABF. In beer circles, people know what that means. Outside of beer circles, or some people that just simply haven't heard the jargon, GABF means Great American Beer Festival. And you can check it out. Check out the activity, because as it gets closer to the event, which is late September, end of September, early October this year, you can hashtag GABF on Twitter, and there's lots of people talking about it. So tell us a little bit about the GABF, Julia. I mean, and let's, you know, that's a huge miasma, which is one of Maureen's favorite words.
That's a big word.
Isn't that great? It's like a quagmire.
It's an SAT word, man.
Can you use that in a sentence, please? Talk briefly about the originations, if you're comfortable, of the GABF. Is that a question I can ask you?
No, of course. I mean, Great American Beer Festival is 30 years strong this year. What a huge deal. I've been to personally over half of them, which helps me show my 42 years of age.
Woohoo!
And it is in Denver every year, and for those that haven't been to it, it's certainly something you should put on your radar. The tickets sold out in 1 week this year, which completely took them by surprise.
I could not believe that, yes.
For 32,000 tickets, that's pretty crazy.
That's
and
insane.
I have to pay homage to you as hostess and the hometown network that's listening to us, at least not on the internet, but live via radio, is that, you know, Oregon Brewers Festival is amazing. It's 20-some-odd years strong. It's the largest non-ticketed event in the U.S. It's 80,000 people.
Wow.
I mean, you guys got it going on. But Great American Beer Festival as a ticketed event, because you physically have to buy a ticket to get into the convention center and space where the beers are tasted, you don't pay as you go type of thing. It's just a different version and different style of festival, and what makes it truly unique is coupled with that is the premier competition for today's U.S. breweries. And if you win a gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival, it means you make the best example of that beer style in the United States for that year. And it is bragging rights central when you can bag a medal. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to say about GABF is put it on your radar if you haven't been there. It's sold out this year, so you're going to have to wait. Tickets go on sale in July. It's overwhelmingly fun and a great example of the advanced beer culture going on.
Yeah, I like the overwhelming fun part. It is. I sometimes talk to friends. I'm like, you know, wouldn't it be great if we were like batteries and that we could just store up sleep and energy, and then when we need them, we just push the on button and we just go until we run out. But that doesn't work for me very well. So there's only a limited reserve. It's kind of like when the tank is dry, guess what? There's no more beer. So
that's the cycle of life, Ginger.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Teacher
Julia.
Rest and tornado on, Ginger.
This is why,
you know, girl.
This is why I admire this woman, everybody. She keeps it grounded for me. The judging, I remember talking to David Walker, your friend and mine, of Firestone Walker, after the World Beer Cup, which happens every 2 years, which will happen again in San Diego next year in conjunction with the Craft Brewers Conference. And they won some awards, of course, and equally valuable awards. And I asked him in that awards and competition vein, I said, David, what does that really mean for your brewery? And that was an interesting conversation. You know, it's definitely a big source of pride that these judges that come from all over the world. What is the breakdown on judges percentage, Julia, from the States versus versus elsewhere?
Great American Beer Festival is about 10% international judges.
Okay.
Which is a very nice mix, and Chris Swersey runs the competition, and this is a very different type of competition, just to kind of shift it, than say wines would be judged. And back to the medals, if I can just highlight that.
Yes.
When you win a medal at a wine competition, often it means you reached a certain point level. So they'll give away, you know, many silvers and many golds, and some, you know, sometimes double golds, just because you reach a certain point level.
Mm.
So it's very important. So the judges that are placed there, and we'll have over 170 judges this year at GABF, are really charged with a very important role and take it very, very seriously. We have judge orientation the night before, two solid days, sometimes into 2.5 days of judging for some of them, with calibration discussion and how do you tell, you know, alcohol levels within the style range, and very detailed technical stuff that reminds these judges of the role that they have to play. And it's to get to the level of judging is seriously a pinnacle of many in their career, and those 170 in the room all deserve to be there and perform a task that is certainly fun to serve, but very valuable and hard to do at the same time.
Right. Yeah. That is an interesting thing. I think it's one of those nudge, nudge, wink, wink things for people that don't understand judging or how serious it can be, and how, you know, not actually serious, but how much there is to it. It's so involved. It's a huge dedication point. I mean, these people, these rock star brewers especially, some, I'll just think of a couple examples that are well known. You know, Jamie Floyd, another good friend of yours and mine, great, great person, co-founder of Ninkasi in Eugene. He's
headed to Burning Man next week.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw him at the film premiere also, and he was our special guest on our second annual Raft and Craft trip down the Rogue River. And so Jamie and I had time to really talk about some stuff, you know, without having to rush off to everything else, which is my only gripe with any festival. You're like, oh, you know, we all just really want to sit down with each other and just not have a time limit and enjoy a beer. Anyway, he was telling me a little bit more about the judging process and how intensive it is, and, you know, unlike the wine industry, and this is not a snub or anything, the wine judges, you know, spit and they remove the wine from their mouth. The beer
judges. We're proud to swallow in that spit. Let's just get the elephant in the room.
All right.
It's
yes.
Fine.
So, yeah.
You have to get the bittering agents to really, truly understand.
Did
and
I strike a nerve?
You will ingest the beverage, and on the wine level, how can they not have palate fatigue? I will ask a question. I would like to judge in a professional wine competition. I try to be an advanced palate. Somebody let me in a wine competition so I can understand it. They will go through 30 or 40 wines in a flight. That is insanity. How can they continue to judge on the level of approaching the first beverage compared to the 30th in the same manner? It doesn't make sense to me. You know, most judges will go through 8, 10, 12 maximum, give or take, in a flight. It's all very strategic
mm-hmm.
on the beer side.
Excellent. Thank you.
And the wine side is strategic. I just would like to understand.
And I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to have you in as guest judge, because we're not, of course, perish the thought, burn it at the stake. Nobody in the beer community, don't wineify beer, right? I know that you hate that, and I hate that too. We're not trying to be wine. Wine shouldn't be trying to be beer. They are remarkably different beverages, and we can certainly get along, but don't wineify, just like don't pinkify or some other things, but we'll leave
right,
that on the table.
Since we might as well make good food for fodder on the radio, one of my favorite concepts is I have proudly, in front of, frankly, at this point, probably thousands of people, if you add it all up, you know, outed myself as a cross-drinker, and I think the rest of us should come out of the closet and be cross-drinkers, too. We enjoy wine, we enjoy beer, and we enjoy spirits sometimes. It's okay. And, you know, there should be no that box mentality, and in all seriousness, I do think that we should be practicing to be beer geeks, not beer snobs, and that means
yes.
be inclusive, and that's where wine lost a lot of traction, frankly, is, you know, they got kind of snobbish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know too many people that say, "Yeah, I want to hang out with some snobs." We extol that too. It's. I don't think snob is an attractive title for any reason. It indicates arrogance and judgmentalness. And you know, one of the things I think we all love about the beer community is that everybody is very open arms. You know, let me get you a glass kind of feel. It's not, oh, you're drinking that. You know, drink what you want. And if
yes.
people are really a beer geek, they're going to say, "Great, how are you liking that?" Or, you know, I might try to encourage you to try something else, but I'm not going to turn my nose up at you trying something. If that's what you like, that's what you like, and that is great.
Right. Taste yes. and experiment.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of it. Be open-minded.
Yes.
And Maureen Ogle wants us to remind everybody that particularly red wine, she didn't say this, but I will add, that red wine would stain your teeth. And so spitting would help with that, too. And so back to that, you know, that wine would be judged in a very strategic manner. I think that makes a lot of sense, because I don't want my teeth stained.
Well, you know what, Maureen, you're so right. We don't want stained teeth. And I would wonder if I'm going to go out on a totally unscientific limb here. I'm going to say today on record that the carbonation in a properly carbonated beer and the astringency of the hops will help keep your teeth clean. I think that the American Dental Association should look into that, because that helps clean your palate, and it probably helps keep your mouth healthy with that great live yeast and so forth. So I'm going to throw that out there, and that can stick whatever wall wants that bit of totally unscientific blather. You are listening, excuse me, you are listening to Beer Radio. I am Ginger Johnson, your host. Yes, it's live radio, and I love it. Our special guest today is Julia Herz, Program Director of the Brewers Association. Julia, tell us one more time where people can listen to your musings and find out about what you're doing.
Sure. Craftbeer.com is the beer lover website of the Brewers Association, which is the national nonprofit trade association on behalf of the majority of companies in the U.S., and I have a blog called Craft Beer Muses on that website, and I also act as publisher, and it's hopefully a great resource for anyone that wants more information on craft beer.
Excellent. Thank you. I am Ginger Johnson, your host. You can find us online as well, womenenjoyingbeer.com. We are beer educators for consumers, and we do consumer-driven research as well as serving the beer professional beer community, helping them properly address women in beer. And it's still a low percentage, and so everybody, you've got your work cut out for you. Grab one of your favorite gal pals and take her out for a beer. So we've just got a few minutes left. Dang it all. That's my least favorite part of the program. Julia, is there anything specific on your mind that you want to touch on today or share with us? I know you're always a fountain of information. So here's your opportunity. What do you want to share?
Sure. I appreciate that. And I think it's a great chance to highlight some of my takeaways from just having visited Oregon literally last weekend. because of your live radio audience listening, and I was struck, I could not help but be struck by the advanced culture in Portland particularly, and Oregon pride behind beer. We toured the hop fields, and we went to breweries, and the bottom line is that I got a sense of collaboration that I haven't seen in some more advanced beer areas in the country, and I would like to see it. And what that collaboration was not just brewer to brewer, where you're seeing brewers collaborate with each other and support each other. That's a given. That's going on mm-hmm. throughout the U.S. right now.
Right.
But beyond that, you saw a much stronger collaboration than in some areas of brewer to beer lover. And that really excited me. And I was very, very excited to see there was beers being made and beers being discussed that came about as ideas from brewer sitting and talking with beer lover. And that is, I think, a great direction for the industry to continue to go, is even more tied to the community and more in touch with the wonderful supportive people that support the craft brewers themselves. It makes it very symbiotic and makes it even more of a creative outlet and artistic kind of avenue for not just the brewers but the beer lovers. It's open source, so to speak, and that was just pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. I'm
very, very still processing that. Pretty amazed.
Cool. Excellent. Let's see. Jogged a couple other things, but we've only... Well, what the heck. We can go right up to the top of the hour. One of my favorite questions to ask people, Julia, is what is your earliest beer memory? And I'll preface it with, it doesn't have to be the first time beer passed your lips. It could just be your memory of being aware of beer.
Well, I kind of feel like the strongest earliest is when I was early... Not everybody's been listening for full hour, but I'll quick recap that. I mean, before I was 10, I was exposed to my family treating beer as an outing to go to a restaurant to help get my brother more cans for his beer collection.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very solid, strong memory that continues to be a picture in my mind today.
Excellent. Do your parents and your family, do they rely on you or maybe even expect you to tell them about the latest, greatest, newest, try this kind of beers?
Yeah, they're super cute now about it. They didn't get what I was doing when I was like, 21 and 22. But they definitely, like my dad sends me Washington Post articles all the time. They're from the D.C. area. My mom, actually, her and I, like, she came up to New York from D.C. when I was on a New York trip, and I took her to the Blind Tiger, and we went for beers before the theater, and then we went to La Dielce, I think I say that wrong, it's a French restaurant, amazing in New York, that really was well-known, that was very beer and food-centric, and they're willing to experiment with me and have me guide them, and That's a very honored role, Not often in the generations do the younger get to guide the elders, and it's I'm very honored every time they give me the chance to do that.
Awesome. Julia, you've been a great guest. I really appreciate you extending your workday to come join us from Colorado. Thanks again. We've been listening to Julia Hertz, coming from the Brewers Association Program Director. Julia, thanks a ton.
Thank you, Ginger, and Women Enjoying Beer is doing great things. Keep it up.
Thanks. We'll see you in Denver.
All right, see you at the Great American Beer Festival at the end of September.
Can't wait. Cheers, Julia.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Beer Radio, your live radio and archived radio source for great beer interviews and beery information. Coming up next is another fabulous live radio show, Radio 80s with Lenny, and he is going to hit it shortly. I'm going to thank you for listening and streaming and passing it around. Maureen, special shout out to you. And tune in again next week, and until then, enjoy a great beer. Cheers.
I'm in love, and I'm so glad that it's me that you chose. Sprouting and blooming.